Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's seminar hosted by the International Inequalities Institute. So my name is Johannes Pirouet. I'm a professor at the economics department, and I'm the team leader of the research program on the public economics of inequality. So I'm incredibly pleased to be chairing today. So the title of today's seminar is Evaluating Allocations of Opportunities. And we're very happy to have our speaker today, Francesco Andreoli. So Francesco is associate professor of economic policy at the University of Verona, and he's a research associate at the Luxembourg Institute of Socioeconomic Research. So his interests are in public economics and in particular distributional issues and the role of public policy in evaluating, in alleviating inequality. So can I ask the online audience to keep yourself muted, but you're of course very much invited to turn your videos on. And as usual, there is a chance for you to pose questions to the speaker, but this is following the presentation. So we'll take questions from both the in-person audience right here and the online audience after the summer. So let me also already advertise the next event of the Inequality Seminar Series, which is titled Mobilizing Productive Subjectivities, Transnational Production and Social Reproduction in Unequal Europe. And that will take place same time next week. So I'm now handing over to Francesco. Many thanks all and enjoy the event.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Johannes, for the nice and kind presentation. And thanks everybody for attending. It's unfortunate that I would have loved to come in person, but I have strong difficulties in getting my passport renewed at the university, at the Italian police station that take care of this. So there are shortages of passport apparently. So you couldn't get a new in time for coming to the UK. So and apologies for that. I would have really loved to be there in person. Let me give this talk about evaluating allocation of opportunities. So that's joint work with two social choice researchers from Marseille, Mathieu Feur and Nicolas Carrel, and Tista Kundu from CSH Delhi, who have also worked on empirical sessions of the paper. So I've been working together with my co-author on issues related to inequality analysis for a long time, mostly in theoretical contribution. I guess you are all familiar with measures of inequality and problems related to measuring inequalities. And I'm sure you're all aware of recent development in the literature, and especially the focus that the literature have taken over the last 20 years about what is called inequality of opportunities. This paper tries to some extent to contribute to that literature. What do we do here? What's the objective of this paper? So in this paper, we want to provide a general methodology for evaluating what we call allocations of opportunities between groups of agents. So groups here is very sloppy name, and group can be as fine as single individuals. And what is an allocation of opportunity? An allocation of opportunity here we consider to be a collection of probability distribution defined over a set of outcome of interest. So, and each distribution basically concern the opportunities offered to individual or to group of individual by, for instance, a given society in a given period of time or under a certain policy regime. So again, we call about allocation opportunity as understood as a list of probability distribution, where each probability distribution define the chances that some individual, some person, or some group of people sharing some similar characteristics have to achieve any of the potential outcomes. So the framework is general enough to contain within it a variety of contribution that will be much clearer later that deals with inequality opportunity. But the basic question that we ask is how can we, when can we say that one allocation of opportunity is better than another? I think that this question is relevant under many domains. For instance, it might be the case that you would like to compare regions or countries by the extent of allocation of opportunity they grant to person living there. Or you would like to compare allocation opportunity changes over time, or a setting that I'm sort of working in is to evaluate the implication of policies in terms of reshaping opportunities of people that have been treated by the policy. You can take evaluation with different perspectives. You can look at average outcomes, you can look at distributional impact, or you can look at distributional impact conditional on some underlying heterogeneity, for instance, the background of origin. In that case, you're gonna estimate a lot of policy effects. And you would like to have criteria that combine those policy effects in a natural, meaningful way that allows you to conclude something about the effect of the policies for the opportunities, which are possibly one of the objectives of the policies that have been targeted by the policies themselves. So the criteria that we look at will be able to compare different allocations, like with and without two situations, it could be with and without a policy, in a meaningful way, normatively meaningful way. But let me be a bit more concrete about what we mean by allocation opportunity and impairing. Yeah? Let me start with an example. We take the most clear example about inequality opportunity, which is caste in India. So it comes by its own that the problem is relevant. It is obviously right, reasonably a violation of opportunity in the sense that the caste you have is the caste you're born with, and nobody will take it away from you. We're going to analyze one outcome which can be grabbed from surveys, which is education. And we're going to compare, in this case, two states in India, Odisha and West Bengal, for a variety of reasons that I have to explain. But so the focus will be very much on caste inequality in India to start with this example. And those two states are interesting for a variety of reasons, but let me start from a simple evidence about them. If we take the average opportunity in this state, we can measure them by a cumulative distribution function. On the horizontal axis, you have the level of education of people born in these states, in Odisha and West Bengal. And on the vertical axis, you have the share of people that have at most a certain level of education. Like number three is equal to something like primary education level. And you have that mostly at that 40% of the people have a level of education, which is the high level of education they achieve is primary education. They don't have any other qualification. Those two states may be interesting because eventually the average distribution of opportunities in the state are measured by educational outcomes. So the lotteries that we see in both states, on average, the green side. So on average, one expects to get the same distribution opportunities in two states. Why are opportunities unequally distributed? So why there are some people that have smaller chances of achieving, say, university degree compared to primary education? Well, that depends on the market, depends on the budget of family, depends on the structure of the education system, depends on many. Okay, we're not taking a stance about that. We're simply taking a stance about the fact that there is a distribution of the opportunity, and the two states are interesting because they coincide. When you differentiate by caste, defining an upper and a lower caste, according to the basic definition of caste that are available in India, you take a survey where you survey people from different castes and you measure the level of education in 2012 for people coming from the same group of cohorts, so they're very comparable. What you easily see is that there is a sharp difference between states in terms of caste inequality. Upper caste people in both West Bengal and Odisha tend to have higher opportunities, higher educational outcomes compared to people to lower caste groups. On the top of that, the worse off groups, so the lower caste in West Bengal, tend to have higher opportunity than the lower caste group in Odisha. On the other way around, upper caste group in West Bengal tend to have lower opportunity than upper caste group in Odisha. The configuration that we have is a sort of sandwich. You see, the distribution for West Bengal are always within the spectrum of distribution opportunity in Odisha. Intuitively, that situation is one where inequalities in opportunity, that is differences between opportunity profile across caste in West Bengal, can be easily thought of as displaying lower inequalities compared to the distribution of opportunity across caste in Odisha. Let me say that we are not, of course, the first one to look at that problem, and this huge literature that is always expanding that look at that specific problem. What does this literature do? So this literature takes usually an ethical responsibility approach. What does it mean? It relies on what is called the working class. So it relies on a definition of what is responsibility for people. The underlying notion is that inequalities that are due to responsibility are fair and acceptable and should be regarded as fair. So inequalities on average can be retained as fair sources of inequality as far as they pertain to effort and individual. Whereas the residual inequality, whether they come from background of origin of individuals or they come from other sources like luck or good luck in the society, they may deserve a form of compensation. There are different papers that have, like 20 years ago mostly, tried to operationalize this criteria in more or less robust ways. Most of this literature is focused on one question, defining when there is equality of opportunity and eventually testing for that. There have been contributions that have tried to look at equalization, meaning a criterion that allows to compare, for instance, West Bengal and Odisha, to conclude when it is the case that even if there are obviously inequalities of opportunities in both situations, when it is the case that we can conclude that inequalities are smaller in West Bengal compared to Odisha. So which kind of normative criterion we appeal and which kind of, and provide also statistical criterion that can allow us to conclude. There is a paper by myself, Gray Havnes and Anole Frank, that sketched a robust criterion that is simply looking, well, in fact, at quantile, vertical gap, horizontal gap between this distribution and relates them to a normative model. There are approaches that are less robust but more conclusive that are based on indexes of inequality opportunity. I'm thinking of one of the oldest papers by Benabou and Ock and maybe Ferrer and Guignoux and other surveys that appear later. They had very nice contribution in this domain. And in most cases, those approaches are interested in assessing inequalities between groups, where groups are defined by characteristics that are unfair to the individuals. We believe that why there is so much emphasis on equality or lack of equality of opportunity in the literature and comparison based on inequality, the literature is a bit neglecting one important trade-off, which is between the effect of improvement and equalization of opportunity that we would like to bring together in a setting where we look at allocation of opportunity. Let me tell you why this story is important. So in this paper, we try to eventually, I think I'm having the wrong version of the paper open. Let me get a second to find it out. I was picking up the wrong version of the paper. Okay, good. Can you guys all see the graph on the screen? No, you can't. Let me share. Sorry, I had another paper and I got the wrong version of it. Okay, good. There it goes. Okay, there was one slide missing. That's it. So let me tell you why it is important to see the trade-off between improvement and equalization. So again, here I'm displaying average distribution opportunity for Odisha and West Bengal, and that's 2012 dashed line. You see that they are equal on average. But if I go back some 30 years, 83, still looking at people at a comparable group of 40 and 83, we see a clear pattern of dominance. Average opportunities in West Bengal are far better than those in Odisha. So whatever is the level of education that you look at, there are much more people achieving higher level of education in West Bengal compared to Odisha in 83. Okay, so there is a sharp difference in averages. When we take 83 and we compare differences across those two countries, with those two states, West Bengal and Odisha, in terms of caste, what we see is that inequality opportunity is slightly resembled among them, among these two countries. We can even be forced to conclude that probably gaps in opportunities are smaller in Odisha compared to West Bengal. However, if we accept or we look at criteria that look mostly at inequalities of opportunity, so gaps between distribution, we may be forced to conclude that inequalities are smaller in Odisha compared to West Bengal. But that conclusion is sort of neglecting the trade-off between improvement, between the differences in improvement of opportunities across West Bengal and Odisha with inequalities. In fact, what you see is that the worst off group in West Bengal is still far better off in terms of opportunity compared to the best, to the upper caste group in Odisha. Therefore, we are tempted to conclude, in fact, the situation, if I had to choose where to be born, ex ante, I would probably prefer to be born in Odisha, in West Bengal rather than Odisha, because even if I end up in the worst single class group, I would eventually get a better opportunity profile compared to being born in the upper caste group in Odisha. Mm-hmm. So that factor should be, we think, taken into account in evaluating allocation opportunities. So what we do in this paper is to take a perspective where we are agnostic about the degree of responsibility. So we simply take a perspective where we have groups and opportunities associated to those groups. In our example, groups can be as finely defined as individuals. So you may have a situation where for each person in a society, you have a profile of opportunity that defines the chances that this person has to achieve any possible available outcomes. Person or people can be even distinguished by their effort. And opportunities can measure, for instance, the educational outcomes. If a society is very meritocratic, for instance, it allows, irrespective of the story of individual, to access university education, but only 10% of the population can access as the best 10% of the population, then you expect to observe educational inequalities. As long as by construction, 10% can go to the very top of educational distribution. But you expect that ex ante, before exerting effort, if there is no impediment at all to climb the ladder of education or to climb the schooling career, the only thing that matters is possibly effort, ex ante, everybody should experience the same distribution of chances to get at the top, which could be 10% before exerting effort. Maybe effort carries you with higher probability at the top, but before exerting effort, everybody has an equal chance of 10% to get to the top, if nothing but effort really matters to get through the education process. And that's a representation of opportunities that very much fits into the setting that we're looking at. We define allocation opportunity, and we look not only at the fact that they are equal, display equality or inequality, not only at equalization, but we also look at the trade-off between equalization and improvement. And let me say that this paper, in that respect, conveys two contributions. The first one is debatable, and that's where I expect questions from the audience. The second one is useful, but mathematically hopefully correct. So prove me wrong if you are able, but if you can, but I think it's likely correct. The useful application open up possibility for implementing the criteria we develop, and also raise question about how we can further weaken the criteria, which I think are relevant discussion. But let me go through the debatable contribution first. The debatable contribution is about how we represent an ordering, a way of ranking to different allocation of opportunity. The second contribution is about how to test that ranking. And that's where the mathematics part kicks in. But the debatable question is about how we represent the preferences, the social preferences about how to rank one allocation opportunity better than another. We're going to develop a criterion eventually that will be robust, in the sense that we're going to look at agreement across a large set of preferences. And the price to pay for robustness is, of course, that we come up with possible incompleteness of our criterion. So, new question, open up question on how to weaken the criterion to have more conclusive ways of ranking. So, let me start from the notation. There will be some mathematics here, but I'll try to be as much pedagogical as I can to give an eye also on the empirical application. So, opportunities are rationalized in our setting by a matrix. Matrix has K outcome as column, and we're always going to compare to a location opportunity where the number of outcomes is fixed. You can think as outcome as many things, for instance, educational level, as an example that I just showed. In the case of India, there are six columns in the matrix because there are six levels of education. Rows of the matrix represent groups or even individuals. So groups can change across matrix. There can be as many groups as individuals, and for each person, PIH, or I represent the probability, the sum of for group I, or even the probability that Mr. I achieve a certain outcome, H. So PI will be a row in this matrix, a vector. So with small PI, always indicate a vector in this matrix. The matrix P is, of course, row stochastic, in the sense that the rows represent distributions. And you can also craft an average distribution for the P bar, which is the symmetric average opportunity. I will come back to that in a second. Why this strict outcome is not continuous, like maybe you would like to measure education with a continuous outcome, or you may use variables such as income, which is cardinal, of course. or test achievement, which may be ordinal as an outcome variable, there are continuous. Well, we think that the discrete setting is interesting for two reasons. First of all, because it allows to rationalize, very well the axiomatic that we have. Second, because it's not at all empirically restricted. Even if, when you have continuous outcome, empirically, eventually, you're going to estimate most likely using semi-parametric method your distribution on a finite grid of realization. And for that finite grid of realization, you estimate probabilities. So in the empirical setting, having a representation which is discrete is not at all we think restricted. What we can do and are working on is to develop a continuous version of the test that we use. I'm not presenting that, it's really a mess, but I think that is sort of the continuous case come by approximation. So let me get back to the case. That's my data. An allocation opportunity is this kind of matrix. And I want to compare matrices, Q and V. What kind of outcomes do we care about? Well, we start from the situation where outcomes are possibly incompletely ordered. It turns out, quite surprising to us, that the fact that outcomes are completely or incompletely ordered is completely relevant for the analysis that we do. In fact, we can have results that are robust to the way in which we order outcomes. Which kind of outcomes can we care of as measures of opportunity? It can be outcomes that are not ordered. For instance, the neighborhood where you decide or the school that you choose. Maybe you have no a priori order then, so they can be completely permutable. And in that case, may want to use non-permutable assumption about the outcomes. Or for instance, an output could be joining the army. Is it good or bad to join the army? Nobody knows. So the outcome may not be ordered. There are cases where the outcome is obviously ordered, like situation where your outcome is income or health. And in that case, it makes very much sense to think that the class of the metrics are ordered. And there are cases where the outcome are quasi-ordered. Think about looking opportunity in the space of income and health, which is a traditional problem in multivariate inequality analysis. In that case, cells of realization represent levels of income and levels of health. Being poor in income and poor in health is surely worse than being rich in income and rich in health. But how to rank low income, high health compared to high income, low health is a matter of debate. There are vital preferences that could rank the two situations as in different ways. So our ordering of outcomes could be incomplete in that sense. And the criterion accommodates for that. So the question is, I have two allocation opportunities, Q and V. Could be, say, an allocation Q after a given policy, like a policy that affects opportunity of kids or the lowers barrier to enter of education is put in place. And another situation B that represent a counterfactual situation, say how the situation in a given state would look like if that given policy didn't take place. You want to make an evaluation exercise. So you have two allocation opportunities. You want to compare them in a meaningful way to conclude something about the opportunity, the welfare effect of that policy. How you do that? Okay. So let me say that what you're gonna do is eventually to run set of distribution, set of logics. That's the kind of task we are endowed with. And we take a very specific perspective. We say, if you want to evaluate your opportunities, let's take the perspective of an ethical observer, the policy maker, and follow through the traditional sort of the fundamental sort of property action that you use in inequality analysis. That is, we require this policymaker, this evaluator, to fall behind a veil of ignorance about the group that he will be in a given society. And this person has to declare, this policymaker has to declare whether he prefers to live in Q and P or P. Knowing that, this person will not know under which circumstances, under which group or which person he would be in the society. That's the veil of ignorance hypothesis. So this person, this evaluator knows the data of P and Q, but he doesn't know eventually where he will end up in this matrix. And under that veil of ignorance, we ask him to take an evaluation, okay? This veil of ignorance hypothesis is very important. Then we have other properties that we feel like we need to characterize the preferences of this evaluator. So there are some technical actions that are, I think, not debatable, that I listed at the end of the presentation, but I will not discuss now. But there are other properties which I think are more debatable and are worth setting out from the outset. And you tell me if you believe in them. If you believe in them, you're going to believe also the result I'm going to present in a second. The first property is the sort of anonymity. This property says that we don't care about the label of the group. And with the label of the group comes, for instance, the size of it. So the evaluator, under the veil of ignorance, doesn't care about whether in a society 90% of people are low caste and only 10% are upper caste. He cares that there are two groups, and a priori doesn't know who is going to end up being. This action is perfectly suited when you think the opportunities are defined at the individual level. In that case, there are any individual, and most likely, you may think that under the veil of ignorance, there is exactly 1/n chances of being any other person in the society. So it makes very much sense in our point of view. Implication for that, you want to discard the logic usually carried over in multivariate inequality analysis, or welfare, multivariate welfare analysis, that of rank reversal, and you accept a multivariate inequality analysis where you have origin independence. We think that that is one central contribution of this work. So you get along away from one of the fundamental results of multivariate inequality, which is the Atkinson-Bourguignon paper, towards a result that use or introduce origin independence into social welfare evaluations. The second property that we think is crucial and debatable is the averaging. Suppose you have the two states, the two Indian states, West Bengal and Odisha. You remember from the previous graph, it seemed intuitive that on average they're equal, but West Bengal, there is this sandwich sort of figure, West Bengal is within Odisha, so West Bengal could be preferred to Odisha. Same average, less inequalities across groups, maybe West Bengal falls in, can be deemed as better than Odisha. Now, suppose you create a region in India which simply pull together the two states. You just eliminate the boundary of the two states. You create a new society. What does this society look like? Well, we ask our ordering to place this specific society obtained by averaging, by putting together the two states, in between West Bengal and Odisha. So our ranking will be able, the ranking that we study, to place it somewhere in between. This specific action just shift the focus for inequality. That's important to understand. In inequality analysis, if you have a distribution of where income is equally distributed among poor people, and a distribution where income is distributed among rich people, you may prefer to be among the rich rather than the poor, but when you pull together, you increase inequality, right? So the average in inequality analysis per se doesn't really appeal. But when you put inside the evaluation concerns about welfare and improvement, then the average improve, I think it starts having a bias. And the bias comes from the fact that if West Bengal is preferred to Odisha, probably we would like the situation to improve a bit on aggregate and also group level if some people from Bengal, West Bengal, are joined with those Odisha. So the lowest level of opportunity for lower caste is deemed to improve a bit thanks to the contribution of West Bengal. And that contribution improves, we think, inequality of opportunity on aggregate. The third property is that we may want to have situation like allocation where everybody gets by default the same distribution of opportunity. Those are one group society. So you may have any individual, but everybody has the same share of opportunities. That's a situation where you, every index of inequality opportunity, any criterion will say there is no inequality opportunity at all. Even in that case, if that specific distribution, two specific distribution PQ with no inequality opportunity at all can be ranked according to the quasi-order of outcomes, for instance, by first-order stochastic dominance, then we would like our criterion to pick up that order. When there is no inequality opportunity, if it turns out, like in 83, remember 83, no? If it turns out that on average, everybody has the same profile of opportunity, but in West Bengal, there is far more opportunities for education than in Odisha, then we would like our criterion to say, well, maybe West Bengal is still better than Odisha. We can still rank them, even if there is no inequality opportunity at all in both sets. Put together those actions along, as I said, with technical action, and we say we can characterize the relation. We can characterize the preferences of the policymaker, and the policymaker is bound to conclude that Q is better than P, if and only if Q and P are evaluated with what we call the uniform expected evaluator of expected utility function, okay? So very messy name, complicated name, with this weird symmetric short name for it, which says which constitute a representation of preference of the policymaker that are consistent with the setting I've just described. So if you want to dispute about the setting we develop, you should dispute about why we want to go with that. But if you believe that schematic, That's the criteria we're gonna appeal to. And that's the only criteria. There's no other criteria. That's the only criteria. So what does the welfare criterion say? He say aggregate evaluation three steps. First of all, take your data, your allocation of opportunity. Those are list of probability distribution defined over outcomes. Attached to each outcome J, a utility level. Utility is an evaluation of the outcome. Basically, how much the policymaker evaluates, value those outcomes. If the outcomes are ordered, like in education, it makes very much sense to think that higher level of education goes along with higher utility. If they are quasi-ordered, then the outcome evaluation could be much more mixed. Take the expected utility of the outcome. What is the expected utility for J? For Mr. I, it will be basically the expected utility that person I or group I expect to achieve given the distribution of outcome. There are many groups in the society, so each group has an expected utility. We value that expected utility through a valuator, P function, which is increasing and complete. What does it mean increasing? Increasing means that if you increase expected utility, so outcome improve, say, improve in P in Q compared to P, then you want this function to pick it up. And concavity, I will explain in a second. The evaluator makes an evaluation, and that evaluation, since the evaluator is placed under the veil of ignorance, he simply need to take an expectation of those evaluation across all groups. But since it's under the veil of ignorance, that expectation is linear across groups. So each group is weighted 1/n. Very much appropriate setting if groups are individuals. So you end up having this three-step procedure to aggregate evaluation. Out of a matrix, you first aggregate information by row and then by columns. In the very way you would like to do multidimensional inequalities, which is a different way that you would apply when, which is different from the way you usually, the way usually evaluation are aggregated in say human development index type of conventions. So first by row and then by column across. Comparative statics, well, it turns out that you capture feature of distribution of outcome and phi captures inequality of opportunities. Of course, inequality of opportunities is irrelevant when you have only one outcome. But let me say why concavity of phi capture inequality of opportunity with a simple example. We have P and Q here, two matrices, same average. On average, you have two outcomes, good and bad. If you move mass of probability to the good outcome, it's always good. In this case, they have the same average. But in case A, your name, the label of your group or your name determines your fate. If you are Mr. A, you're gonna achieve good outcome for sure. If you're Mr. B, no way to make it to get the good outcome. Situation Q, you have a fair chance to get both outcomes, a priori. So while the average opportunities are the same, the criteria, the expected utility, the evaluator, the concavity evaluator simply say that the expected utility is more unequally distributed in the P case compared to the Q case. So you will end up to be whatever is the choice of concavity, the Q is better than you. So increasing concavity means increasing the degree of aversion to the quality of opportunity. Is the criterion totally new? So. It was hinted by a paper by Martinez, Chocard, and Van de Gaart, but in analysis of mobility measurement. It's a very nice paper, intuitive paper. I think it's an important reading on the subject. The criterion that we have has very much connection with decision making under ambiguity. In fact, if you think about it, we have a decision maker which knows the probability, there is uncertainty, but there is ambiguity about which eventually distribution will come up to be realized for him. So it's a choice, it pertains to decision-making under ambiguity. And there is a very nice paper by Han that characterized the providing characterization discussion about families of criteria for decision-making that are related to the criterion that we just exposed. We have an axiomatic characterization of that. And it also links and talks to a paper by Mariotti and Veneziani on Economic Journal. And this paper used the Nash order. What they look in this paper are lotteries with just two outcomes, good and bad. So they take a predictional perspective to look at equality of opportunity as probability of having success in life, having the good outcomes across people. For instance, make it to the top 20% of the income distribution. Okay, that's the outcome. Their criterion is the product of probability to make it at the top. It's called Nash ordering because it's related to the Nash bargaining criterion. And turns out that this specific ordering is one member of the family function that, we analyze. So we have a much, much more robust criterion that, expressed in the paper. Not only because it expresses, it generalized the criterion, but also because it applies to more complex configuration models. So we ignore two things here. We ignore what phi is, we ignore the use. So in practice, the policymaker can be everyone in the society. So a priori, we don't know who he will end up being. And we ask whether we could, how we can tell about society. How can we can order to society, to allocation opportunities under this sort of ignorance. Here we construct a normative criterion that looks at unanimity as the founding source. And so we want the criterion to be very robust with respect to the choice of P and of U. Okay, and robustness, of course, makes the criterion very conservative. So we would like to conclude on the ranking of Q, Q and P only if there is the most and the largest evidence that support that. To have the largest evidence means that the ranking produced by our function should hold irrespective of the choice of U and irrespective of the choice of P, as long as P is increasing and concave and U are consistent with the ordering of the number. In the following, I will abstract from the differences in N, that is reputation invariant sort of property at work here. So we sort of abstract from that discussion at the moment, okay, presenting the result.
So Francesco?
Yes, Daniel.
Sorry, this is Chico. I'm not sure if the chair allows questions at this point.
We sort of agreed to have questions at the end of the session. But if it's a clarifying question that could benefit all, I think is worth
pointing out. It's just a quick clarifying question. So first, what was interesting about your matrix in the beginning was that the outcomes weren't ordered necessarily, right? You made the case that they weren't ordered, but here now they are ordered.
So they could be a quasi-ordered outcomes. So the situation where each of these cells represent, for instance, a cross tabulation between income and health is an opportunity, is a possibility. Of course,
but you,
may end up in a situation where the outcomes are completely ordered. And that's a case that fits very well in the setting.
Right, because you have the ranking by utility in the slide you were just in.
Exactly, but when you take the quasi-ordering, you can think of a quasi-ordering of utilities as well. So not only you require robustness in terms of all possible utilities, but also with respect to all possible ways of ordering situation like low income, high health, with respect to high health, low income.
Okay. And then the other question.
Layer of complexity. But suppose you start from the layer of complexity, you simply look at the ordering, then in that case, utility will be well ordered like in these slides.
So now we're in a subset of the general case in which there is ordering.
Okay, let me say, yes. For simplicity, I will be working in representing result in the subset where the outcomes are ordered and the subset where NQ is equal to NP. For presenting the results intuitively, but the same result holds. And that's the interesting part of the story. They holds, of course, when the N differs, that's just a matter of normalizing, but they also differ. In fact, they also equal the kind of result that we have. So the theorem that we develop, they coincide also when the utilities obey the quasi ordering.
Okay.
And it's much broader than that. But for simply, I think it's simple to see the outcome as ordered. So it's maybe.
Okay. And last question, I promise. So when you have concavity, you need to have a ranking of the types or the groups here, the ends, right? So otherwise, you
can't. Endogenous in a sense. It's endogenous to the choice of the use and therefore to the level of expected utility. That's the ranking of the type. So the ranking really is by the expected utility assigned to each group.
Okay.
So the expected utility that one person say expect to achieve given his own opportunity profile. And that's what really makes the order for one given choice of view. But then you have many possible view and many possible way of interpreting concavity. All those things work together, so they need to be interlocked in the criteria. So we need a test that takes all these into consideration. There are two options. Either you check for all U and for all phi, and you never end up in your life, or you want to use a geometric procedure. So what do we do? Possible approach that we follow.
So Francesco, you have a good 5 minutes left. So I've been tempted to ask questions as well, Chico, but I was told that we should leave them until after the talk. But the good thing is that in 5 minutes, we have our as well. So
Okay, thank you. Okay, let me wrap up with a summary of the test. I mean, that's where the mathematics kick in, but we can discuss later maybe. I mean, so let me just get an hint of the test. So we are in the case where outcome are ordered. There are many groups, okay? You cannot do the exercise of performing dominance for every unit, for every V will take a life. So you want a statistical test that turns out to be sufficient and necessary for your critique, right? So what can you do? You can take your allocation, which are the data, and maybe find convex bodies, geometric bodies that represent your data. And then you can use as a critique the fact that the convex body associated to the allocation Q lies within the convex body of allocation P. Very weird kind of sentence, but remember that the Lorentz curve that you use to perform empirical analysis is in fact itself a convex body, a convex polytope. And you can use the inclusion of convex polytope as an equivalent test for Lorentz dominance. So you do exactly the same in univariate inequality analysis. Hmm? Which kind of body do we want? We want the zonotope test. So what is a zonotope? It's a set of points. Hmm? So it's defined on the k-dimensional space. It's the k, is the space of outcomes. There are k outcomes, k-dimensional space. What do? You take all the lotteries, all the opportunity profiles for each person in your location, and you convexify them. Well, you linearly transform them by weights. Weights can be between 0 and 1. So you may consider having the sum of all the opportunity profile, or you sum simply 1/n of all opportunity profiles. So you get the average, okay? Second, you want to extend this set by the set of all utility improvements. If you have an ordering of classes or a quasi-ordering of classes, you also have a continuum to say when improvement take place. Hmm? For instance, by first order stochastic dominance, then you can sum to your space all the space that contain all the first order improvements of your initial operator. So for instance, if you have 3 dimension, as long as you move mass from the lower outcome to the middle outcome, you're making an improvement. But if you move mass from the high outcome to the middle outcome, you're not making an improvement at all. So this vector, the blue vector, will lie in the improvement, will generate an improvement, and the red vector will not. For the math-oriented minded people, the set is the dual of the extended zonotope is the dual set of admissible evaluation vectors, if you want to give it another name. So as I said, I have 2 convex body, the extended zonotope of P and Q, those are convex body, and I can check the inclusion. I can check whether the extended zonotope of Q is within that of B. And that generate a partial order of lotteries. Why a partial ordering? Because either you have the inclusion or the 2 set intersect somewhere. If they intersect, no inclusion at all, like the Lorentz curve. Lorentz curve is a partial order distribution. Either you rank Lorentz curve or the Lorentz curve intersect. And if they intersect, you cannot conclude. Hmm? You cannot, so let me draw the zonotope thing. You have a case with 2 outcomes. Good outcome is rightward, low outcome is leftward. Huh? So 3 people, they have different opportunities to succeed. Hmm? So back to Veneziani Mariotti. First guy has 30% chances of succeed. Hmm? So let me draw three sort of budget spaces here. Each budget space represents one simplex in 2 dimensions. Dimension of low outcome, horizontal axis, and high outcome, good outcome, vertical axis. Hmm? First lottery is 0802. So we're going to draw a point here to represent this lottery. Then we take into consideration the sum of lottery 1 plus 2 and sum of 1 plus 2, the actual lottery. So the sum will be equal to 2 in total. No? So we are on the budget with total value equal to 2. The sum of the 2 gives something which is like 13 and which is 1.3 and 0.7, which is about here. And then we sum all the 3 lotteries and we get to the point 1.5. In fact, the sum of the lottery will give 3 as a sort of budget. Hmm? Those are 3 simplex, huh? They belong to the sequential sum. Remember that the zonotope is generated by any possible sum. You can sum P1 plus P2, P1 plus P3, then P2 plus P3, and then portion of the three, or start from the bottom onward. So you start from P3, then you sum P3 plus P2, and you get to this point, and you sum the other 3. All the points in between are equally feasible according to the zonotope. This gray area is the Dexalia representation of the zonotope in 2 dimensions. Now we need to add the extension. The extension is the space of improvement. So suppose you are in this point, this lottery, how do you improve the lottery P1? Well, you improve if you move a little bit of mass from the low realization to the top realization. Moving mass means moving towards the diagonal, leftward towards the best outcome. So any movement in the leftward direction will improve the outcome. Okay, so we take the space here, the gray area, to represent the extended zone. And it, if you remember, it looks like a sort of space that you identify with the extended, with the generalized Lorentz curve. The generalized Lorentz curve is represented by this curve, and that end up exactly at the average. So as soon as you have distribution that display a higher average and lower inequality, you're sure there will be inclusion, so there will be dominance. Our main results say that the inclusion in Zontov is equivalent to the normative ordering, that is the very robust inequality of welfare ordering of allocations of opportunity. So in the rest of the slide set, which probably I will not have time to present, but if you have questions, I'll be happy to address them. We look at different ways to rank those opportunities in different situations. That is, how easy is to check dominance? Well, there are cases where you can check with finite tests. There are cases where the situation is much more difficult. Let me give the simple geometric test. If you have the two dimension, the test will look like that. You draw the extended zone for a distribution P, you draw that of Q, and you check inclusion. In this case, for instance, you have a distribution Q, which has no inequality opportunity at all, meaning the extended zone is just a straight line. Whatever group you pick up, everybody share exactly the same distribution. But the average distribution Q is less favorable than that in P. So despite Q has lower inequality opportunity, it's not welfare dominating P. And it turns out that our criterion signal an inconsistency. We cannot rank the two distributions. There was a lot here that we can discuss if you wish, but let me get to the last slide.
Can I?
Do I have 1 minute?
Can I ask a clarifying question? So
yes,
before you did the extension, I missed how we would rank a Q and a P. So.
This configuration.
So before you did the extension, then you said, oh, it's for any theta, and then you showed like the how do you call that?
Zolotov.
The Zolotov. Okay. So if I have a P and a Q like this, how do I compare them?
Okay. So in this case, we know the outcomes are ordered. So it makes sense that the extension is there, so need to be considered, because you know that any improvement, say for the first. Look at the first opportunity profile for Mr. One. If a bit of mass move from the low realization to the higher realization, that's definitely good. So where does it die? The improvement. You improve the situation, you reduce the mass of the low outcome, and you increase the mass of the high outcome.
Okay, so but the upper contour is irrelevant. That's once you consider
the upper contour is relevant because it belongs to the extension.
Okay, good.
Right. So the lower contour, in fact, is relevant because if you go below the lower contour, you're basically producing a deterioration somewhere. You can move to lower contour only if you move some mass from the good outcome towards the bad outcome, which is something you don't like.
Okay, good. I missed that.
So you want to be consistent with that idea. So when you have the two opportunity profile here, Q bar is obtained by reducing the opportunity of some of the groups. So there may be some improvement for some group compared to P, but there are some deterioration for some other group compared to P. And it turns out that the average is smaller, is less favorable in Q than in P.
Okay.
In Q, you have larger chances of achieving the low outcome compared to P. So the average will lie outside the space identified by the previous zone, right?
Yeah, thanks a lot. So why don't you take a minute to wrap up?
Yes, exactly. I was just concluding with one slide. There is also an application in case you want to go through how you implement the thing, but let me get to the last slide. So what we have shown is that we have a criterion, the Zolotov criterion, that allows to rank situations consistently with the normative model. You may ask, well, it is the case that you can feasibly and easily do the test. So when you have two groups and the groups have the same mean, two groups is a relevant case, for instance, when you look at gender divide and caste divide, when you have male and female, you want to look at gender differences, and you may have the same mean. So male and female, they are not, you compare situations, say where the average outcome is the same, but you have these changes in dispersion. In that case, you can end up testing zone of inclusion with a finite test or with elementary operation, meaning you can trace down the operation that generates that inclusion. When you have two groups and difference in mean, still you have finite test procedures. Very good. Suppose you have any level of groups, a situation where you have a population, but you have just two or three outcomes. In that case, as I showed you before, I can draw this on, literally. I can literally draw it. No? So if you can draw it, you have a finite procedure that allows you to conclude that. And on the top of that, you can also find transformation of the data that allows to grant conclusion. If you have many groups, like many individuals, for instance, that could change across P and Q, and the groups are ordered by stochastic dominance, so that's a peculiar case that you find in many inequality opportunity applications. I have a paper myself on Norway, which is seen as one of the most equal opportunity countries in the world, and still, when you condition opportunity by gender and by parental background and by skill level, you still can clearly order those groups by first order dominance. Hmm? And if it is the case, and you have many groups in society that are all ordered, then in that case, you can come up with a finitized procedure. Irrespective of whether the outcomes, not the group, but the outcomes are ordered or quasi-ordered, we don't care. That's not relevant for the test. The finite procedure always exists. In the most general case, with many ends, many outcomes, and groups are not ordered, we can almost always grant inclusion, but there are cases where we are not capable to test. And that's where we are working on. And if you have any idea or interest in assessing why it is the case and why failures are there, I'd be happy to learn on that. Okay, thank you very much. I'm done.
Great. Thanks so much. So we're taking questions from the floor and from
yes.
people online. So I think the instructions for the online people online have been given. So yeah, anyone? So why don't I pick up then? I want to know a little bit more about how you think about the definition of groups, because yeah. the way I think about this is like often we do can you relate it to how I would think about heterogeneity or in ex post realizations versus heterogeneity in ex ante types or ex ante groups? And I think depending on your definition of groups, the outcomes are going to be extremely different. And so you take groups as given, but how would we get guidance on how to define groups? That's a question, I think.
Yes, can I answer directly to that? Yes, we want the criterion to be as much skeptical as possible about the what is called the working cap, this idea of defining what is responsibility and by difference defining what is not responsibility and what should be compensated. We wanted the criterion to be a situation where sort of take the perspective of the practitioner. And the practitioner, policymaker, reporting, whatever, knows that it could be group of relevance in the population. That it can be even individual. So individual can be heterogeneous. And what the caring is really the fact that there are chances to succeed on a distribution which is multivariate, right? And we like success, but we like to order different configuration by how much success prevails in one configuration compared to the other. Taking into account that not only we care about improvement, say one situation, somebody improves success, very good. But we also take into account whether those chances of getting success differ on us across people that have been defined example. So from an empirical perspective, it comes very natural to look at ex post outcome like education. And to look at probability of getting educated by certain characteristics of origin for which people are deemed not to be responsible for. The case example is, let's say, probably the most likely one. But that's one specific case when you use ex post realization to infer about the opportunities profile of these groups. The model as we stand it is sufficiently general that can work in a situation where the groups are really individual with their effort level and their heterogeneity level. And you care ex ante about the distribution of opportunities that each individual may face. And that's, I think that the interesting aspect of it, in the sense that the way in which it is operationalized empirically is a separate matter compared to the normative content of the criteria. So we want to be very much skeptical about this operationalization question about how we trace group, how we divide group, and whether we take outcome ex ante and ex post.
Okay. Okay.
Chico,
you have a question?
I do. Francesco, this looked very nice, very interesting. Pity I can't be there, but of course you're not there either, so that's okay. I just want to challenge a little bit or ask you a question about this idea that you said, well, this literature has always been trying to measure things either with scalar indices or to test whether there is equality of opportunity or not, a la Lefranc, Pistoles, and Tranois, and then all the indices. But there were two kind of two sets of papers that I thought were interested in sort of quote-unquote welfare rankings. One is in that that older literature and opportunity sets, you know, papers by Patanaik and Shu and Kranik in the 90s, and then Waymark in 2003, where they talk about sets of outcomes and they use either cardinality conditions or some sort of Lorentz dominance as well, as I recall, within, you know, about those. So I wonder how your work relates to that one. And then the second is, if you take Vito Peragine's 2004 paper, for example, what he does there is he establishes exactly these dominance criteria for matrices, which we then used in the paper with Paolo as well in this chapter for the Oxford Handbook of Wellbeing that Mark Fleurbill was editing, where we talk about this matrix in terms of types and trenches, but trenches really could be relabeled outcomes very much without a loss. Certainly, if you have ordering. So that's the key doubt that I have is, you know, how much more general you have it if you don't have the ordering across. So if you have ordering of utilities across the different trenches, as it were, across the J, across the columns, then you're very much in the same world as we were. And it's all about dominance criteria, first and second order dominance criteria of different rows and combinations of rows and sequences of rows, right? And we also use this Atkinson and Bourguignon theorems of the 80s. So I was just maybe missing, or maybe you could tell me a little bit like what the essence of the difference is in what you're proposing to that.
Yeah. Okay. Concerning to the welfare ranking related to opportunity sets, I agree that the kind of setting we look at talks very much the literature more than probably exposed sort of evaluations of opportunity. There is, part to our knowledge extends, criteria for assessing comparing opportunity sets. None of them has developed the way those opportunity sets are eventually valued, because they correspond to list of options available to people, and there is a clear emphasis on the expansion of the list of options available to people, as if they call them budget sets. I remember the criterion in the paper by Kranik and Bernard that you are thinking of. And in fact, they do not come up with this clear intersection between the way improvement work in that setting, separated, interconnected, sorry, with the way in which equalization works, as you understand. So that the form pin down to the action, the average sort of action is clearly one of the differences between the set. in a set perspective, if you join together two sets, it's always better than not having to join them, because you feel like you have two set opportunities. You join together, you span the set in which people can choose. Whereas the setting we are developing here is a setting where if you bring together two allocations, then the allocation you get would be at best, what you can say, something in between the original. That's probably one of the main motivations. So if you look at sets, when you join together sets, it's always better to sort of expand the list of options that are available to people. When you join together sets and you have the focus we have in the paper, it lies produce. So what they actually say is that you're going to end up having a configuration that lies in between the original.
It's the probability. That's the role of the probability distributions, isn't it? They just had lists, whereas you are attaching probability distributions.
That's more or less as if you are adding sort of columns to the metrics in the setting of tests. Like your metrics say how much where I can reach with my data, and they say, oh, if you add more, you have more degrees of freedom to realize yourself or whatever. No, you're more liberty. And that's probably one of the differences with the fact of the set that we have, because we say, okay, we look at outcome, not really at opportunity sets, and the outcome may define itself with opportunity set. That's true. But we look at the outcome space, and that's very, it talks very much the most recent probably literature on equality opportunity compared to that literature on opportunity sets. And if you pin down to the outcome, that's the main difference of attention. So you don't expand actually the set of opportunities by adding together two countries. You change the morphology in which distribution are located across outcomes. Second relation with Vito and the Atkinson-Bourguignon type of criterion, to some extent, you were sort of mentioning it, the solution, in the sense that the Atkinson criterion, you like to be origin independent, but you also like to go beyond that. Eventually, part of the analysis of welfare analysis of inequality of intergenerational mobility, speaking up that idea, the more you're calling mobility metrics, and if you're in a setting where you have outcomes are quantile, percentile of kids and groups are percentile of distribution of departure, if you become anti diagonal, you're very happy because you have overcompensated the group, in fact, the ranking of the group compensate for the outcome. Whereas the action that we impose, the anonymity thing, just move away from that perspective. And you say, there is a welfare model, but it's sharply different from Atkinson and Bourguignon in taking origin independent as the reference setting, and the four evaluation are scaled to that logic. In one case, it turns out that in some specific cases where outcomes are ordered, where groups are ordered as well, the criterion that implement the zone of top comparison is a sequential dominant criterion, very much similar to the criterion you have in mind. So you take distribution, you sequentially sum the distribution, and you check for each step of the sequential sum of distribution whether there is a certain order of dominance, which is very much the test you have in mind, right? And that comes, in fact, out of a specific restriction about the way groups are labeled and ordered in the data. And outcomes are ordered as well. That's probably, I would say, the point of connection and also difference between those different approaches. But you're absolutely right. And I'm not really telling you that or not happy to go for indices. Rather, we're thinking hard in having more and more implementable criteria, because the implementable criteria, I think, is somehow informative about which kind of index you can maybe craft out of it. Of course, one can take any choice of fee and you, and one gets a welfare measure of opportunities. Huh? But okay, it's very arbitrary. So we wanted to look at indices that are very much connected with the test rather than the criterion. Of course, it's very, very arbitrary.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I think we'll need to wrap up. That's what I'm told here as well. So thanks a lot for this excellent presentation, and thanks a lot for everyone joining either in person or online. Thank you very much.
Thank you, everybody. And maybe I can stay online for another hour or so. I mean, I have a lecture at 3:30, unfortunately. So, but if you have more questions, I'll be happy to take, like, very conversational.
Great.
Okay, cheers. Thank you very much, everybody.